Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Seth and Sean's Fans Sean. Don't know where Mr. Palmer is, probably on the subway coming back from work while I lounge comfortably on my deck. Well, I guess we're on my couch right now. On this Tuesday, such a happy, I think he just called in. Good afternoon, Mr. Palmer.
Hey, how's everybody doing out there? Sorry about the delay. Work actually kept me late today, and that is a surprise.
Really?
Yeah, it's the end of the year for my company, so everything seems to it just happens last minute. But that's okay because I get my favorite hour of the entire week with you fine people.
Aw, he's lying. You all know that, of course. But welcome to the show. And we start the last 2 weeks. Sean has started with, Seth, are you panicking? Are you worried? Are you concerned about your Giants? And after the first week, I'm never concerned. After the second week, I said, all right, you know what? We probably weren't going to beat Denver. I'd like to see how, I wish we had played better. But let's see how we do on Sunday against a very beatable Carolina team, a team that lost to the Bills, for God's sakes. Well, everybody, now I'm panicking. The Giants put up potentially the worst performance that I can remember them putting up in recent times, losing 38-0 in a game that wasn't even that close. I think about it, and I guess it could be worse. I have a friend who's a Giants fan, a Steelers fan, that went to West Virginia. And I think he's already looking for basketball season. But there's not much to say for the Giants right now. They are out of sync, and they are awful.
Yeah, I got nothing. You basically just said it all. I mean, like I've been asking you for the last 2 weeks, are you ready to panic? And it seems like you are. Now, okay, so let's go even further. I mean, let's look down the schedule. And I was sitting watching the game in Arizona. It was 95 degrees, so sitting inside with my cousin Adam, who is a Giants fan as well, and my cousin-in-law, I guess you call him. His name is Brad, and he's a Chiefs fan. So a Chiefs fan living in Arizona and a Giants fan living in Arizona. And looking at Thursday night's game, where the Giants play the Chiefs in Arrowhead Stadium. Giants, to me, are going 0-4, my friend.
I agree.
And it's potential that they can go 0-7. I mean, looking at their schedule coming up, and we did this analysis, and I don't have it in front of me, but I will get it. We were saying, is there a chance they can go 0-7, 0-8? Where is their first win? And we couldn't come up with one. And granted, in the NFL, anything can happen. But we were going through this and going, okay, so where's their first win? Because I got them losing this week. I don't know about you, but I don't see them beating Kansas City in Kansas City.
I agree. I do think week five, they're at home against Philly. I think that may be winnable.
It's winnable, but would you pick them to win the game?
Probably not. I think the first game that I would pick them to win is game 7 against Minnesota at home.
Right. Yeah, that's where we were looking. So it's 0-6.
Yeah.
And that's Minnesota. That's home.
Home.
I'm sorry, that's home.
And there are some other winnable games. But, I mean, I don't really know what to think about it because, to be honest, usually a team falls apart in one aspect of the game. They've fallen apart in every aspect. Their defense, their offense, their running game, they couldn't even kick a field goal. They looked, their offensive line looked embarrassing. Eli threw for 130 yards. Akeem Nix is complaining. I don't think they have more than one sack this year. People who drafted David Wilson are crying. into their fantasy beer mugs. They're a disaster. The only saving grace they have is the division is horrendous.
Yep. As we said on the preview, I think Dallas runs away with this division. I said that on the preview. I said I think they go 10-6, 11-5. I still think they do.
They were going to run away with the division?
I thought that they were going to win it, no doubt.
I win it,
I
yes, run away with?
8-8. I think everybody was going to be 7-9, 8-8, or 9-7, and Dallas would be 10-6 or 11-5. I still think
that's not running away with the division.
I still think the Giants are going to be 6-10 or 7-9. I still think that, even if they're 0-3. I don't think that that's hard to come back from. I still think that the Redskins will be 7-9 or maybe 6-10. I think the Eagles will wind up at 8-8 or 9-7. And then you have 11-5 or 10-6. Still think all that is incredibly possible. But I think the stat of the week was that the Jets had more penalty yards than the Giants had on offense. That's incredible on both sides.
I'm going to be honest with you. I was actually out in Williamsburg doing my hipster thing for the Sunday games and Sunday 1 o'clock. There really wasn't much interest in watching the Jets-Bills. It's two teams that are going really nowhere this year, although all props to the Jets for being 2-1 and having a better record than, well, the Packers and the Steelers and the 49ers. I didn't see that coming, and I still think they're a 5-11 team, but good for them. All I know
is
I got home and they had 17 penalties.
You know what the thing is, though? The Jets, okay, so we know this every year, and I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid. Look, you and I picked them, I believe, at 5-11 or 4-12, so I'm certainly not drinking the Kool-Aid. But teams in the NFL turn very quickly. You can have a great team that turns very bad, and you can have a bad team like Kansas City, who was 2-14, who turns very good, very quickly in a year. So right now, you have the Titans next week, 3-0. But to me, they're not a 3-0 team. They won up by the skin of their teeth last week on a throw to Justin Hunter to end the game, basically. And then you have the Steelers.
They're not 3-0. They're not 3-0. They lost to Houston.
Titans, it's over 3-0.
No, they lost to Houston in overtime.
In
week
that?
2. Apparently so. I'm pretty sure they're 2-1.
Titans. 2-1. You are correct.
Didn't
okay.
DeAndre Hopkins have that game-winning catch?
Yeah, you're right. So they're 2-1. And then you have Pittsburgh thereafter on their schedule. Anybody that's seen Pittsburgh in the last couple of weeks has gone, that's not the Pittsburgh. Oh, no, I'm sorry. They have Atlanta, then Pittsburgh. I mean, could they be 3-3 going into New England? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah. I think that they can win one out of the next three games. Tennessee, at Atlanta, and home against Pittsburgh. I think one of those three is definitely viable going 3-3 into New England. And then you get anything can happen when you're 3-3. And I think the thing is, most Jet fans and most NFL pundits didn't have them at 2-1. So, and New England's not New England. Could this team get to 8-8? Yeah, it's possible. I don't think they will, but it's certainly possible. But I think that the Giants are the second most troubling team in the NFL right now behind those Steelers. Steelers have a lot of problems, and they're really, really old. I mean, they get Le'Veon Bell back next week, which is good for us.
Yeah, good for our fantasy team. But, yeah,
right.
I believe the Steelers, I think you were the one that came up with the quote, have 5 or 6 players that are making at least $10 million next year. And,
yeah.
You know, they're a team that's, you know, they for the last 10 years, the Giants and the Steelers have been among the more consistent teams in the NFL. The Giants – Steelers more at a higher level than the Giants. The Giants have one more. Actually, they both have two They both have two Super Bowl wins. But the Steelers have been 10-6, 9-7. The Giants have gone, have had 9-7, 8-8 teams. But they're structurally among the most fundamentally sound in the NFL from a franchise standpoint, from the ownership down. And this is going to be a bit of a test because you potentially could be looking at 4-12, 5-11 for each team.
Which, quite frankly, would not be the worst thing in the world long term.
No.
Because neither of those two teams is – the Giants aren't winning a Super Bowl, and neither are the Steelers. So at this point, do you want to be a playoff team, or do you want to just, I guess, shuffle the deck and hope that you can come up with good draft picks every once in a while? Because after this year, the Giants are going to lose Hakeem Nicks. I don't think there's any way they re-sign him. I don't think they franchise him either. So they lose him. David Wilson's probably not the answer that they're finding right now. Yeah, they have the quarterback, but they don't, other than Cruz, they don't have many playmakers on that team. And the defense is, who knows what if JPP is going to be back to where he was. Is Justin Tuck on the other side of 30? They don't have any playmaking linebackers right now. So, I mean, is it time to infuse some new talent? You know what? You may have to give up a year, be 4-12, 5-11 to do that. Speaking of up a year. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, the Giants haven't had any linebacking talent for the most part since Jesse Armstead. They haven't built – the last two Super Bowl teams haven't been built around any linebackers. And I, for one, was kind of hoping they were going to draft one this year. They had a chance at Arthur Brown, the All-American from Kansas State, and decided to pass on him. So they're a team that's always been built around their front four. And the interesting thing was the Jets have always been the team that's been built around their back four, the secondary. And actually, I was talking with Ryan the Rabbi, who's occasionally co-hosted and appeared on our shows. And he was saying, as a Jets fan, you can't be that optimistic, but at least now you have a front four or front three with Copels and Wilkerson, where there is some hope, where there really is a solid looking, young, talented defensive line. And so, there's the hope for the Jets. And, the hope is, again, as you said, is a 6-10, 7-9 season. Whether that saves Rex Ryan's job, I doubt it. But, there is more of a light at the end of the tunnel than a lot of us had foreseen going in.
I agree with that. Their defense has played incredibly well. And granted, they've played against a Tampa Bay team that they should have lost to, a Buffalo team that is not very good, and a New England team that is not what New England used to be. But their front four has been getting pressure nonstop. So there is something to look forward to in that respect. And you're absolutely right in regards to that. And even if you go back to when they were in the championship games, they were getting pressure. Last year, there was absolutely none of that. So kudos to Rex, at least for getting the defense on the page. Now, it would be great if he put Kyle Wilson in timeout for a couple of days so he didn't throw another flag. But that's another – the Jets gave away 60 yards on one drive in penalties and three first downs on one penalties on third down, two of them offside calls. Utterly ridiculous. But speaking of giving up – well, what you thought was giving up the season, and I would like to take back any predictions I had on the Cleveland Browns based on what they did last week. The trading of Trent Richardson – the starting of Brian Hoyer, the return of Willis McGahee and Josh Gordon, and the emergence of Jordan Cameron, who had three touchdowns, not to be confused with Cameron Jordan, who had a sack and a half for the Saints.
Oh, I haven't been great at predicting games. I did pull this one. I did think Cleveland was actually going to give Minnesota a pretty good game, and I had them covering. I didn't know if they would win, but I thought it would be a pretty tight game. These NFL teams do have a lot of pride. Sometimes you don't realize it, or they don't really reflect it. And people writing them off, if I'm a professional into the third game of the season, I'm told that I'm tanking. You know, my team is tanking for the season. It would annoy the crap out of me. A lot of people have been high on Brian Hoyer for several years, actually, formerly the backup in New England. And we've seen other New England backups, you know, get some starting opportunities. I'm not saying they've been overwhelmingly successful. Of course, Matt Castle's one that comes to mind. But a really good win for, you know, and you feel bad for Cleveland sports fans almost as a whole. So anytime you can have a modicum, I can't even think of the word. Of sports success, you root for it. And, you know, the consensus is it's not a pick. It's a win-win for both teams. Cleveland is not going anywhere this year, but they have a good defense. And with this coach, they're looking for more of a scat back type, not the power runner. More of a Jamal Charles or a C.J. Spiller than the Marshawn Lynch, Trent Richardson. And they had decided that Trent Richardson was not going to be the all pro running back, the stud running back that they thought when they drafted him number 3 overall last year. So
I don't think it really has. To me, first of all, Jim Brown predicted this last year. He said, "I don't see anything special about Trent Richardson." Prophetic. But to me, it wasn't so much that they traded him. It's what they gave up to get him to trade him. And I understand it was a different, philosophical concept between general manager and coach. But they gave up, I think it was a 4th, a 6th, and a 7th to move up one spot to get Trent Richardson from 4 to 3. Then they traded him the 3rd pick in the draft for will probably amount to number 20 and a 4th round pick. So to move down 16 spots in a draft 2 years later, they gave up a third, a fifth, a sixth in 2 years ago's draft, and then moved down 19 spots in this draft. So, I mean, I think it's just the bounty that was placed on him. And I understand that you can't mix the 2 years and the two trades. But I think that's what Cleveland fans are going up in arms about. We gave up so much to get this guy, and then we just gave him away.
Yeah, no, I completely understand that. I guess the idea and I'm not trying to justify it. Ironically, the guy who is the new GM in Cleveland, Mike Lombardi, had said a year and a half ago that he thought Richardson was kind of the once-in-a-generation back, I believe. It is kind of an ironic twist. And the funny part was they probably didn't need to trade with Minnesota to get him. Minnesota was not going to take a running back at 3. And apparently there wasn't a huge number of teams trying to trade with Minnesota to get out to go up to get him. But now you have an interesting situation in Indy where you have a stud young quarterback, stud young running back, a decent defense, and a team that looks like they're on a mission, you know, perhaps being a bit overlooked after a playoff season last year, going to San Francisco and beating up a team in somewhat disarray out west. We're going to talk about Alden Smith a little bit later, but you know, you could see Seattle doing what they did to San Francisco was not a complete shock. They beat them by 30 in Seattle last year. Is this just a hangover, or is this a forebodings of something to come?
Well, I really don't know. I mean, they couldn't get their running game going at all. Kaepernick was – and is it possible that we as the collective got so infatuated with Colin Kaepernick, and he was the new kid on the block last year, so he had all these things that – we hadn't seen. We hadn't seen the pistol before. We hadn't seen a person with a quarterback with his talent that we have forgotten that he's a second-year quarterback. I mean, or maybe a third-year quarterback. But the fact is, he's still a young guy. He's still growing. He didn't go to a top Division I school for a reason. And maybe that's playing out now, that people have found out his weaknesses since he's not the new kid. They've studied up on him, and this isn't all so new. So maybe he can't do it all. And let's remember, too, the 49ers, while Anquan Boldin is a tremendous receiver, right now are lacking what they thought was going to be their first and second wideout in Mario Manningham and Michael Crabtree. Vernon Davis is hurt. Frank Gore is a year older. And that offensive line, which is very good, has been breaking down. So is it possible, just possible, that they're not as good as we thought?
I guess also we should touch on the Alden Smith. I don't want to say tragedy because that's not really the right word. He gets a DWI. They let him play, which is a whole other situation, or DUI, I should say, not a DWI, and is now been admitted to a detox facility for alcohol abuse. Do you think that he should have been able to, he should have played last week?
Absolutely not. That is the biggest crock I've ever heard coming out of Jed York's mouth. Jed York being the owner and son-in-law of the former Ed DiBartolo. No, brother-in-law. Sorry. Denise York is Ed DiBartolo's sister, and Jed York now is the president of the team. And he said, it wouldn't be right not to play Alden Smith because we wouldn't be standing by our player. Paraphrase. My point is, don't dock him the pay if you want to stand by him. But what kind of image are you showing that this guy has just been arrested for the second time on suspicion of DUI in the last year? He's been shot at in the last year. You know there's a problem. But, hell, what the heck, we're playing a tough team, so let's put him in the game. I wonder if they were playing the Buffalo Bills or the New York Jets, and I put the Jets in that category, whether he would have played. I'm not sure so much about that.
Well, I guess other things to talk about, and we're going to start something new on the show during football season. We have a show on Thursdays called Monday Morning Hangover, which is a fantasy – It's strictly a fantasy football show. Good show, hosted by Anthony Mulholville, I co-hosted the fantasy podcast with this year, since Sean was indisposed. So because a lot of teams have two or three have pickups, waiver pickups on Tuesdays, Anthony has graciously given us a 2 to 3 minute little snippet of people to pick up, people not to pick up. So I think we're going to play that now, and then Sean and I will discuss it. We'll discuss it in a couple minutes. Sound good, Sean? Hello?
Anthony Mulville, host of the Monday Morning Hangover Fantasy Football Podcast, which airs every Thursday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and is brought to you by BackSportsPage.com. I'm here to give you the fantasy follow-up for Week 3 and a look ahead to your Week 4 matchup, so listen up in order to win this weekend's games. Here come the bye weeks. Not a problem. Leave all your decision-making to us. A lot of teams are going to be left without their star quarterbacks in Week 4, with Aaron Rodgers and Cam Newton getting the week off. A few fill-in guys that I like. Check up on Terrell Pryor later on in the week after suffering a concussion Monday night. He should be good to go against the Washington Redskins defense that's allowed more yards in their first three games than any other team in the league. I also like Phillip Rivers at home this week in a tasty matchup against a shaky Dallas secondary. Rivers is coming into his own and looking like his old self with the reemergence of Antonio Gates and the arrival of Eddie Royal and Danny Woodhead, who is now third among running backs in receptions. Both players should be available in one quarterback league, and you could safely drop them once this weekend's games are over. We lost two big quarterbacks to a bye, but the blow is softened by lack of running back production that comes from either of those teams. While you shouldn't have too much trouble replacing D'Angelo Williams and whoever becomes the next irrelevant running back that Green Bay decides to put in, there is one stud running back I would consider benching if you have a better option. Arian Foster is officially in a timeshare situation with Ben Tate, and until further notice, he can't be relied on for a full workload. Mix that in with a very tough matchup against Seattle, and I'm looking for a better option at running back this week. Be confident in replacing him with Le'Veon Bell, who is expected to make as much anticipated comeback as the Steelers' every down guy. Pittsburgh is desperate for a running game right now, and they're going to give Bell every opportunity to succeed. If you've been patient for this long, you're about to be rewarded. On to the wide receivers. If Josh Gordon is already owned in all leagues, he needs to be picked up ASAP as he becomes the top 15 wide receiver for the rest of the season and has top 5 upside if he's traded to a high-scoring offense such as New England or Detroit. Speaking of Detroit, Ryan Broyles becomes the number one waiver wide receiver this week after Nate Burleson suffered a fractured arm. Broyles is a PPR stud, especially starting alongside Megatron in the Lions' pass-heavy offense. Let's just hope he can stay healthy for an extended period of time. My start of this week, these aren't fun unless I go out on a limb, so I'm going to predict a big week from Ryan Matthews of the Chargers. For the same reasons I like Philip Rivers, I think it's going to be a very high-scoring game, and Matthews is clearly the most talented back in this offense. Despite losing goal-line carries to Ronnie Brown, there'll be plenty of work to go around in a shootout, and I fully expect Matthews to have his first big game of the season. And while he most likely won't be available in any leagues, I also love Michael Vick this week against a banged-up Denver defense. These teams could very easily combine for the most points scored in any game this entire season, and Vick will be given a huge workload in this battle of fast-paced offenses. My benching of the week. We already spoke of benching Arian Foster, so I'm going to give you a bonus one. I wouldn't suggest benching A.J. Green, but I'm here to tell you that he will not be putting up the production that owners have gotten used to. Playing against a tough Cleveland defense, Green will be shadowed by shutdown corner Joe Hayden and limited by a struggling Andy Dalton at quarterback. I'm never in favor of benching your stud players, but this could be a week where two top five guys at their positions are held in check. This is Anthony Mulvihill with your Week 2 Fantasy Follow-Up, brought to you by BacksportsPage.com and the Monday Morning Hangover Fantasy Football Podcast, airing on Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Make sure to tune in and follow us on Facebook to send in all your questions. Thanks for listening, and best of luck in your games this weekend. Take it to the house.
He talks a lot quicker than we do.
Well, he doesn't have to fill up an hour. He has to fill up 3 minutes.
But some interesting thoughts from Anthony. And you, as he said, you can listen at 8 o'clock Eastern Time on Thursdays on his radio on the Monday Morning Hangover, courtesy of BacksportsPage.com. Any major thoughts on it? Or should we just go?
Well, right now I'm picking up Ryan Broyles in our league, so I'm definitely adhering to what Anthony's saying. And I'm looking in the rest of my leagues and seeing if those players are around, especially Josh Gordon, who I absolutely love. You and I have been waiting on Le'Veon Bell for, it seems like, forever. We both thought that Arian Foster was a gimmick this year and was not going to put up the numbers, and look what's happening. Those are my thoughts. I'd also look to pick up Isaiah Pede, since Dow Richardson got no carries last week and totally screwed us over in our league.
Yeah, it was not a great fantasy week for me, for us, for anyone in general. So going forward, it's a hard year to predict. The running backs, everyone was big on the running backs, and they haven't been great. Peterson hasn't been great. Lynch hasn't been great.
Yeah, I'd also look to pick up Santonio Holmes this week, who plays against Tennessee. If you need a wideout, I think he has some value. That would be another one. And Justin Hunter, who plays for Tennessee, definitely was getting the looks from Jake Locker last week, while Kenny Britt, our stud who's on the bench, got nothing. So,
yeah,
nothing. We got done last week.
Yeah, it hasn't been pretty. It hasn't been pretty for me in most of my leagues. But what can you do? And I think it's time for me to give up on the Kenny Britt experiment once and for all, unfortunately.
Yay, we can drop Kenny Britt. Yay.
We can drop Kenny Britt. I dropped him in another
Yay.
One of my leagues. As Sean knows, I've been big on him the last 2 years. I think he has enormous talent, but it just doesn't seem to be materializing in Tennessee. Maybe
Is
he needs
Mitch
to change.
LaMoose. He's Nick LaMoose.
But so many
in the NFL. Town and a 10-cent head.
Going forward, what else do we want to discuss? I don't know. What are we feeling right now?
You know, the thing You know, the thing is, I didn't get your thoughts on Alden Smith. I think this is a bigger deal than a lot of people are making it out to be. And not only, not only because he played, but the fact that this wasn't, I mean, if this has been a problem, and everybody that has been talked to has said this has been a problem for Alden Smith, this just came to a head. What's more valuable in this case? I mean, DUI doesn't get the same attention that performance-enhancing drugs do, or marijuana does in the NFL, or any drugs do in the NFL. But to me, DUI is twice that to any of that. Because it's the only one out of those you can hurt somebody else.
I tend to agree with where you went on the situation. I thought it was hysterical. Absolutely hysterical. That Jed York decided this was the best thing that could happen to Alden Smith, was for him to play. If that doesn't ooze hypocrisy, I'm not sure what does. We all wish him the best, and as you said, this has been a pretty prevalent problem with Smith for a while now. Coming off an absolutely brilliant, I'm going to say rookie year. I forget if it was a rookie year last year or a second year last year. I mean, he's 24 years old. You know, he has the talent to be an all-star for the next 6, 7, 10 years. But he has to get his life together. You know, this is his second DUI. And he needs to get his life in gear. And it hasn't, you know, there's not really much more to say. I'm almost embarrassed for San Francisco, to be honest, that this was the course that they chose. But
yeah, I mean, I got nothing. I mean, this has to be dealt with the CBA, collective bargaining agreement, because I was shocked that he was allowed to play. I was shocked that Jim Harbaugh didn't say, you're not going to play. Because, no, the, you know what the thing is? The CBA does not allow for punishment by the team for anything that's covered by the collective bargaining agreement. I get that. The players have been suspended for less. He could have suited up and told you're not getting in the game. Like, there are a thousand ways you could suspend a guy without suspending a guy. You deactivate him and then just say, you know what? We didn't think he should play. We couldn't suspend him under the CBA because we don't have that right, but we have the right to deactivate him every game like the Buccaneers did to Keyshawn Johnson, or they did to Joe Galloway, or Terrell Owens, same deal. I mean, it not only was it hypocrisy, to me, it was a slap in the face to the fans, because this is something, first of all, this is a huge problem in society, DUIs. So, again, it's the only thing that people get suspended for where you can hurt somebody else. And that's why I think DUIs are taken totally too loosely. Now, I'd like to bring up another suspension, which we found. So we've talked about the Von Miller suspension numerous times on the show, 6 games for failing, supposedly failing a test. You heard what happened, right? You heard why 6 games and not 4, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. For those that don't know, he tried to buy off a tester. This is like Ontario Smith with the Wizinator?
Ontario Smith, yeah.
Ontario Smith. It goes to that point. But I'll tell you what, if I'm Von Miller and I'm going to lose $2 million because I'm going to be suspended 4 games, I try and buy off a guy.
Yeah, if that's the only issue that they're facing is an extra 2 games.
Yeah, that's it. I buy off the guy every time. I try to buy him off every time because that's $2 million. If I spend $1 million and I don't get suspended, I've made $1 million. I mean, the fact is, monetarily, it makes perfect sense. But, alas, that's not happening. Anyway, we got the baseball playoffs are coming up next week. We're coming down to the final week of the season, which I'm sure Seth is more than thrilled about, because then Seth might actually watch a baseball game this year.
Yeah, I have a question for you, though. As we watch the Mariano Rivera retirement ceremony in New York, which was pretty fun. Metallica coming out and playing, and people flying in from all over the country. Has this become a bit of overkill? I mean, yes, Mariano Rivera is just about unquestionably the greatest reliever of all time.
Yeah,
but he's not considered one of the greatest. He's not. Is he of a level of what? Let's say if a Barry Bonds hadn't been, or Roger Clemens hadn't been, hadn't had all the issues, where he was worthy of having a retirement ceremony at every city. Did it become a bit ridiculous? A bit more than it was necessary.
Okay, I think a lot of it stems from, I think you have a point. I really do. But in the back of my mind, a lot of it stems from the issue with Roger Clemens and with Barry Bonds. And if the steroid era didn't exist, he wouldn't be getting such a big ovation. He wouldn't be getting this big retirement hoopla. Because when it comes right down to it, first of all, Mariano Rivera may be the most dominating pitcher of all time for what he did. I'm not saying he was the best pitcher of all time. He may be, in the role that he was in, the most dominating pitcher of all time. And he may, compared to his peers, may be one of the top 10 players of all time in relation to the players that he is playing against. So take relievers against relievers. That being said, I think it's more along the lines of his personality that have gotten this, the fact of how good he was. Well, Cal Ripken Jr., you have said numerous times, I agree with you, maybe the most overrated player in baseball history. Right? That you said this?
Yeah.
Okay. Because Cal Ripken Jr. was a good guy, supposedly. Aside from Kevin Costner. To everybody else, he's a good guy. And he did something. He brought baseball back from a strike, supposedly. And him and Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. And he got this type of send-off everywhere because he was a good guy. Barry Bonds never would have gotten this type of send-off, even if he had done no steroids, because people didn't like Barry Bonds. Roger, you liked him on your team, but he was kind of like a Charles Oakley guy. But if you recall, Kareem got this type of ceremony too, every single stop. And Kareem wasn't a great player when he retired either.
Well, very
few people.
In fact,
I tend to think that Mariano was a better player now than Kareem was when he retired.
That's probably fair. I mean, the most amazing thing about Mariano was his game really over 18 years, there was practically no diminishment.
Right.
He was a top three reliever starting in 1997. 15 years later, he's still a top 3 to 5 reliever. You may have one or two that you would put better. You know better than I do, but there's nobody definitively I would rather have than Rivera at this point.
No,
there
was a story that was told, I believe it was in the 2003 All-Star game. And this is from Buster Olney's column, which I read religiously. So he's at the All-Star game, and the AL is up 1-0. And Joe Torre is pacing back and forth, urging on the players to score more runs. And they're in the bottom of the eighth inning. And Darren Erstad, who played for the Angels at the time, tapped Joe Torre on the back of the shoulder and said, "Hey, Joe." And he goes, "Yeah, what?" He goes, "Why are you why are you urging people on? He goes, well, we need more runs. We need more runs. He goes, so who are you pitching in the ninth? And he goes, well, Mariano. He goes, then we don't need any more runs. We're up one. I think that's fantastic. I think that is absolutely spot on. And the fact that it's Torrey, his own manager, that's saying it makes it even better. He was that good. He's still that good. And I think it's more of his personality. And you've said this before. You don't view Kareem as one of the top 10 players of all time.
No, yes, I do.
You view him as a top 10 player of all time?
Kareem? Yes.
Yeah. He's in your top 10. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought he was in, like, your 10 to 15. But okay. But I guess the point is, you don't have to be the top player to get this type of scenario.
Yeah, and
you just have to be a really good guy, and Kareem was a really good guy.
Although he wasn't, ironically, he wasn't very well liked in the NBA. The only, and it's funny, you brought up Ripken, you brought up Kareem. The only person I specifically remember, and once you kind of brought that kind of corollary up, it kind of sparked something. The only player I remember getting this kind of ovation or this kind of accolades at opposing fields, opposing stadiums in their final year was Dr. J. And similarly to Mariano, he was beloved by everybody.
Yeah.
Now, his game had diminished drastically. I also think that there's probably something to be said that most players don't announce before the season or early in the season that they're retiring. They kind of announce it. You know, they do it at the end of the year.
Or
so that may have had something to do with it.
And they don't announce it at all.
Exactly.
Or the – yeah. But I think with Mariano, he's at such a level that he does it himself. I don't think he did it because of this.
No.
I don't think he did it because he wanted all this. I think he did it so people would stop asking him. I think that's the big. I mean, you're going to have a couple of retirements this year. You got Todd Helton is retiring, who may be one of the top five first basemen in the last 20 years. You may have Paul Konerko retiring because Paul Konerko's contract runs out, and he's had a great run, but he's batting 250 right now. And believe it or not, Konerko's played 16 years, all White Sox. I didn't think he played that long. But you may have a couple of these types of retirements, but Helton and Konerko don't have the skills anymore. They're not at that level. Mariano could probably pitch another 4 or 5 years if he wanted to. So, I mean, Green got this type of reception. I'm not sure if you recall it, but, I mean, he got this type of reception so much he was in the race with Billy Crystal, had this reception for him. So, I mean, I think Mariano, are you saying is it over the top? I think it might be, but if it's going to be over the top for anybody, especially being a Mets fan, like myself, look, there are two Yankees I respect, and trust me, if Jeter comes out next year and says, this is my last year, he's going to get the same crap. Because Jeter's universally looked also.
Fair enough. I mean, yeah, I don't think Jeter is as beloved as Rivera is. I think there are a lot of people who don't like Jeter. Rivera, I mean, the funniest part about all of this was what he received in Boston. Because in 2000, there was a picture of him at the All-Star game in Boston in 2005, which in 2004 he had led up the game-winning runs in games 4 and 5. And so Boston gave him a mock standing ovation, and he just laughed and applauded to it, and they painted a picture. And, you know, anyone else could have possibly taken offense. Apparently the Yankees front office took offense. You think the Yankees front office would have better things to do with their time, but apparently not. Mariano laughed it off because that's just what Mariano is. Now, the National League is now set in the playoffs. The American League is still it looks like it's really between Tampa, Cleveland, and Texas for the last for the wild cards. Tampa and Cleveland are tied. Texas is a game out. Kansas City has made a phenomenal run, but they're three games out.
Yeah,
who do you think takes it in the? Who do you think takes it in
the?
Well,
I think it's going to be Tampa Bay, and it's going to be Cleveland. I think Texas drops out. I think Texas, I'm going to look at the schedule right now. Texas right now is playing, Houston is at Texas, and then they go to the Angels are at Texas. So that's their last two series. The Indians play at Minnesota and for their last series, and they play, I know they had a pretty easy, hold on, where the heck are they? Why can I not find Cleveland? They play at Minnesota, and right now they are playing, wow, I'm really, they play the White Sox at home. So I like both of them. Tampa Bay is at the Yankees for a couple, and then they play at Toronto. So Texas plays at home, the other two play on the road, but the Twins are just awful. The White Sox are just awful. And I think Cleveland and Tampa Bay, while they are tied, they have, I think, was it a half a game or is it a game lead right now?
Tampa Bay and Cleveland are tied. Tampa has played. Actually, that's strange. I'm looking at ESPN. It doesn't look right. They have a game. Cleveland has played two more. That doesn't look right at all. It looks like Cleveland should be. Tampa's 87 and 69. Cleveland has
right.
One less loss and one more loss and one less win. But for some reason,
right.
ESPN has them as even, which doesn't make sense.
Well, there are two wild card teams.
Yeah, that's right. They're not – okay, my fault. So they're not, I thought they were saying they were even, and then they're playing – then Texas is just one game out. Texas is one game behind Cleveland, and Cleveland is one game behind Tampa.
Okay.
And then Kansas City's – four games behind.
So, have Cleveland and the Rangers played the same amount of games?
Yes. It's a one-game difference.
Okay.
Or yes,
right.
Except
okay.
Cleveland has a one-game lead.
Right, okay. So I think Cleveland takes it. I think Tampa Bay takes it. I know they're winning right now against the Yankees, so that's good. That'll certainly help them. Matt Moore on the mound. David Price ready to go if necessary. I like Tampa Bay finishing this out, and I like Cleveland. We were saying earlier that Cleveland may be giving up their football season, but I think they're going to be in the wild card game for the baseball. Now, having a one this goes again against everything I think about in having a one-game playoff for the wild cards. I hate it. Absolutely hate it. You have 162 games coming down to one game to make the playoffs. It totally goes, why have the 162 if you're only going to narrow it down to one? But I think that's just the way you're going to see. You're going to see David Price in the first game against whoever Cleveland wants to throw out. It'll probably be Justin Masterson. Who do you think is going to take it?
I agree with you. I also think, and I've said this last year, I say it again, it could be outside of the All-Star Game winner getting the – it's stupider than the All-Star Game winning – getting the home field advantage. It's moronic. You're playing 162 games so you can play one more game. It's a play-in game. Just call it what it is. Don't call it a wild card. Just it's a play-in. I think it's silly. I think it's – again, it's it diminishes a game that has been diminished a lot over the last 10 to 15 years. And
I agree. And this is a way that they're trying to get more fans into it by bringing out the second wild card. And you'll see this continue. I don't think you're going to see a change in this until you see like a 100-game winner lose to like a 75-game winner in that first game. And then you're going to say, excuse you? Like, really? That's the way it works? And I think that is how it will happen. So you'll have two teams in the same division, say the Yankees and Red Sox, or Yankees and Tampa Bay, whatever, who both win 100 games. So obviously the wild card can't be, has to come out of that division. So you get one wild card out of that division, then you get like a 75-win team. No, 75 is a little less, but let's say 87-win team. So you have a 102-game team against an 87-win team, and the 87-win team wins that one game, and the 102-win team goes home. That's when you'll have an uproar.
Now, from the competitive to the, I'd say the polar opposite of the spectrum, it's slightly ridiculous. Did you hear about the ratings in Houston for the Astros-Indians game? I don't think I've ever seen this before.
No, I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about.
According to the Houston Chronicle, in Houston, the Astros-Indians game on Sunday got a Nielsen rating of 0. No one watched the game.
Nobody. Was it on TV?
Yes, it was on Comcast Sportsnet Houston. Of people watching during this period, 23% were watching the Texans Ravens. 1.3% were watching NASCAR. 0.16% were watching the Reds, were watching Red Zone on NFL Network. And 0.5% were watching a Cosby rerun. But the Astros and Indians got a rating of 0, which is lower than our listeners.
That means nobody listened. Nobody watched. Well, it must have a variance of like, it was probably like 0.06 or something like that.
No, it's 0.00. Unless we're saying it's 0.0006 and it rounds up and it doesn't hit 0. It doesn't hit 0.01.
I'm going to have to look into it because that's incredible that nobody turned on the Now, let's understand how Nielsen ratings are compiled. It doesn't mean nobody watched it. It meant nobody with a Nielsen box watched it.
Right, which is of the couple thousand people in that area. It's a sampling of the percentage. But obviously.
Right.
But.
So for those that don't understand how Nielsen is done and those ratings are done, is that a sample of the people in the area gets what's called a Nielsen box, or this is what they used to do. I'm sure it's all via wireless now, but you used to get a Nielsen box which attached to your cable box or attached to your TV, and then it would send a signal back to the Nielsen ratings, so it would give a sample of what the people, so maybe 6,000 out of 600,000 would have that type of box attached to their television, and thus you'd be able to get that rating. So it doesn't mean that nobody watched it. It just means that nobody with a Nielsen box or whatever the equivalent is today watched it. But that's still quite depressing, I guess. Especially since now, I'm sure in Cleveland that was a lot different. That was
Cleveland
market, correct?
Yes, that was the Houston market. Obviously, Cleveland playing for a wild card, spot, and to be honest, although we gave credit to Cleveland for their win over Minnesota, the rest of the NFL world was not really, was not staring at the Minnesota Cleveland game. Most of us were watching the Cincy Green Bay barn burner, which it really was, or any other
game.
No, that was a 4 o'clock game, and believe me, nobody watched
it. Or the Giants game.
Yeah, nobody watched the Giants game after the first half. So one other thing we should touch on quickly before we get to our finale is Manny Machado.
Yeah.
Getting injured, and looks like he's going to be lucky in the Ravens. The Orioles are going to be lucky. He tore his ACL and MCL. But they're saying that he may be able, in about 2 months, he may be able to start running again and avoid surgery.
Wow.
And I haven't,
that's
which is the best that you could ask for.
Yeah. I mean, for those that don't understand, that's essentially blowing your knee out. So that's the Dante Culpepper without the he tore the ACL and the MCL? Is that what they're saying?
Yeah.
Okay, so it misses the TCL, which is the trifecta of bad injuries.
I'm sorry, it did not tear any major ligaments. He has a torn
so it's
torn
sprain.
Yeah, so it's weird. They're saying two different things. It's saying it's a I'm sorry. It's a torn medial patellofemoral ligament. I can't really pronounce that.
Okay,
but
so
the head trainer is saying
so
the MCL
ligament
is fine and the ACL is fine.
Okay, so just for those that don't know anything about knees, which you shouldn't, that ligament, the patellofemoral, goes over the right under the kneecap, so it connects the patella to the rest of your knee. So when people have when they tear the patella tendon, that's what they're tearing. So that is a pretty important ligament, but it's not even close to the rehab of the ACL or the MCL. The MCL is easier to repair, but the ACL is 6 to 8 months. That patella ligament, if it's not torn all the way through, the rehab, and that's a good timeline of 2 months. So Manny Machado, who may be my favorite player in major leagues right now, the way that he plays, that's fantastic news. I mean, for all the Baltimore fans, a quiet hush came over the crowd yesterday Sunday, when he did that
right
to his knee. And it was no contact. I mean, he just went the wrong way on the base. His knee just gave out. So we should go into our picks. I think I went 1-2 last week. I certainly did.
No,
not
I think we both went 2-1.
Oh,
Denver. Yeah. You took Chicago. I took Pittsburgh. I took Kansas City. You took Philly.
Right. Okay. So moving on to our week 4 picks. The Thursday night game, 49ers at the Rams.
I want to do this quickly because there is a shout-out I want to give. I think the 49ers
sure
bounce back.
Me
I
too
think they win this game.
I agree with you. Okay, so that's one. So the Sunday night game, we have Patriots at the Falcons.
Falcons 1-2, I think, right now. They need this game. The
absolutely
Patriots have not been very good. I'll go with the home team.
Okay, we're 2-2. We're together. Dolphins away at the Saints, which is a surprisingly very good matchup right now. Both 3-0 teams.
I think we have a lot of scoring in New Orleans. I'll stick with New Orleans.
Yep, 3-3. I don't pick against New Orleans at home. Okay, who's your shout-out? Go.
We've made fun of Bleacher Report a lot on this show over the years, and deservedly
sure
so. However, sure, one of our favorite people on this radio show,
sure,
a former ESPN writer, is actually joined. Jared Zwirling has left ESPN to join Bleacher Report. He's going to be getting some TV spots. He's going to be getting some digital stuff, some multimedia stuff, in addition to traveling with the NBA, both domestically and internationally. Jared has been great for the show. He's always been happy to come on. And I want to wish him the best of luck at Bleacher Report. And he's going to really bring a whole new level of journalism to a site that needs it. So props to him.
Fully concur with Seth's sentiments. Congratulations to Jared. I said this last week. I'll say it again. My props out this week are to my big brother, who tied the knot this past weekend to a beautiful and lovely woman, Monica McFarlane. And more props to my brother for doing something that we had talked about for almost 10 years now. My grandfather had 3 daughters, so his name does not live on through his daughters. My brother, Mitchell Palmer, will soon become Mitchell Beyer. He has changed his name, or will be changing his name, to carry on my grandfather's legacy. Props to you, dude, because we talked about it 10 years ago. I didn't really think you were serious in doing it, but that's as big of an honor as you can give our grandfather. So congratulations to you and your lovely bride, and I was so happy to be there and see you take that next step. So props to you and all the rest.
Yeah, congrats, Mitch. I'm not quite sure what knot you tied, but I'm sure it was something interesting. props to John Jones and Alexander Gustafsson for an amazing UFC light heavyweight title fight. We'll be back next week with, I guess, our quarter year review of the NFL, and potentially we have to start looking at NHL season. For Sean Palmer, Seth Kamens, Back Sports Seth and Sean, backsportspage.com. Good night, everybody.
See ya.